This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in. Another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray, and man, I'm fired up for today's episode. A familiar face, a familiar voice in the college football betting world, our good friend, the Bear, Chris Felica from Fox Sports, from his podcast as well, Bear Bets. He's going to join the show. He's got a handful of win totals that he likes, and of course, he and I will have to duke it out about the November 7th showdown in South Bend between his beloved Miami Hurricanes and my Irish. That's why I'm wearing the Notre Dame shirt today. But always look forward to talking to the Bear and getting some of his best bets from a contrarian style. Some of the teams that maybe you're thinking could have a big season, he's looking more so towards the under. So the Bear will be joining us. And then we're going to take a little step away from full-on gambling talk, even though there is certainly some gambling elements to it. The Twitter feed Old Takes Expose. It is run by a gentleman by the name of Fred Siegel, and he is going to join the show to talk about his new book regarding freezing cold takes, college football style, an incomplete history of the game's most inaccurate statements and predictions. I got an advance copy. It is hilarious. And it's impressive, too, the depths that he goes through, going back to the 70s, the 80s, some of the Heisman Trophy takes, some of the predictions for games that went completely awry. And we all know maybe it's a bit of a badge of honor, if you will, to get retweeted by the count Old Takes Exposed. But I feel like from a gambling standpoint, to hear some of the best terrible takes, we'll have Fred Siegel on here. I did put out a tweet and appreciate the interaction. Our buddy Colby Dant from the Sports Gambling Podcast chimed in. So I put out a tweet, and you could always follow me on Twitter at one Tim Murray. And I said, what was the worst college football take or bet that you've ever had? And I said, I'm sure I've had plenty, but I did convince myself flying down to South Beach that Notre Dame was going to beat Alabama in 2013. The 2012 season championship happened in 2013. Just to remind you, that did not happen. Alabama was up 28-0, and I felt like could have been up 75-0 in that game. But Colby Dant chimed in with a couple of bets. He said, this one, I think it dates back a couple years. He said, I took Maryland +7 and said they'd win on the money line. Penn State 59, Maryland nothing. I responded with a game. I remember talking about it on VSiN primetime. Maybe it was the nightcap at the time. And I was all in on Maryland at home. It was a Friday night. They played Iowa. I went back and I looked in my spreadsheet of bets. I had Maryland +3.5. I had Maryland on the money line. They lost 51-14. So I'm sure plenty of us have those bad bets out there. Also, a Hog fan chimed in and he said, had Oregon State over 6.5 wins last year. Worst bet ever by me. Insult was added to injury when I almost bet them, when I also bet them -17 against a god-awful Sam Houston team. Yeah, looking at that Oregon State year, that was rather brutal. They had two wins. They beat FCS Lafayette, and they did beat Washington State in a late-night game on CBS. That game was really bad. I remember, I don't know if I bet Sam Houston plus the points there, but it was it did feel like a bit of a letdown spot. So looking forward to talking to Fred Siegel here in just a little bit. Another piece of interaction we got on Twitter, and maybe for you guys to ponder as well. We were talking to Matt Grill from DraftKings Sportsbook on VSiN Primetime. Just a plug here, VSiN Primetime. Myself, Matt Eumanns, 7 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time on VSiN. And he let us know they have put up the no markets out there on the college football playoff and got a bunch of responses on this. There are 8 teams currently at plus money to miss the playoff. And I'm going to talk to Bear about this as well. It'll be Notre Dame 5-1. So if you think Notre Dame can miss the playoff, plus 100 out there. I know my Indiana buddy, who loves to remind me that Indiana won the title, loyal listener to the podcast, likes Notre Dame there. Go for it, man. Hey, if you're going to cash a ticket, cash a ticket. Ohio State plus 260, Indiana plus 255, Oregon plus 235, Miami plus 190, Georgia plus 185, Texas and Texas Tech at plus 154. Jared Smith, friend, said, Texas Tech, if you believe in karma. So there you go. I'll take a look there. Jared Lawyer on Twitter said, Texas, easy pick here, talented on paper, but play with their food too much. See Kentucky, Florida, and Mississippi State last year, and that schedule is relentless. Joe LaPera, Texas. I like Arch, but Sark's play calling alone could cost them 2 to 3 games. Joey Steven, he said, as an alum, I hate to say it, but Indiana has value here. Roster still talented, but they lost a lot, and they'll get everyone's best shot. The Takeover said, I guess Indiana, since they have huge roster turnover from last year, and a bunch of different folks chiming in, a couple of Notre Dame, some Texas Techs, Indiana. So we will see, but I thought that was kind of an interesting angle to look at. If I had to bet one, I have not bet into this market yet, I would bet Texas. Their schedule, as we will discuss, is very, very challenging. I believe Phil Steele has it as the most difficult schedule in college football when you look at the Longhorns. Ohio State's schedule is brutal as well, but you've got Ohio State week two, that game's a pick 'em, at Tennessee, Red River against Oklahoma, Florida at home, Ole Miss. You have to go to Missouri, go to LSU, wrap up the season at Texas A&M. 9-3, is that good enough with that schedule to get in the playoff? We'll see, but it does feel like a big swing game for the playoff for Texas is week two against Ohio State. A couple of best bets we'll talk about. Florida State's win total under 6.5 is going to be something I'm going to add to the arsenal. So under 6.5 for Florida State. We'll dive into that with the Bear coming up. And I have decided to pull the trigger. I was hesitant to do so just because of the number I was not getting on Fresno State. So a pair of FSUs here. I know my buddy Duck loves Fresno State, but got a better number, got 5.5 over. But I was talking about this with Matt Newmans on Tuesday night. He's writing up the Pac-12 for the VSIN College Football Betting Guide, which will be out in a couple of weeks. And he loves this Fresno State team. Phil Steele talked about Fresno State, saying they could be a dark horse to maybe make the college football playoff. Right now, 6.5 over minus 120 is available at Circa. And make sure you do this, folks. If you're going to look into betting into the Pac-12, make sure the book that you bet into stipulates how many games it takes to be graded. So, for example, Fresno State over 6.5 wins at DraftKings is even money, but that's 11 games because of that flex game in the final week of the season. At Circa, it is stipulated flex games included. So you're paying 20 cents more, but you're also getting an extra home game to wrap up the regular season. I do think Fresno State, along with Colorado State, we discussed that on the podcast already. That one has moved in our direction, thankfully. Could be teams to look at going over their win totals this year. So a couple of best bets, a pair of FSU plays under Florida State, 6.5, over 6.5 for Fresno State. But make sure you get those those 12 games in the bet. Hey, just a reminder, folks, college football season right around the corner. You know that. And it's that perfect time of year to read about all of these teams. And our friends over at Pick Six Previews have got their new magazine out. Brett Ciancia has built the number one most accurate college football preview magazine in America. And it has been rated number one by Stassen.com over a 10-year interval since the launch. Their breakdown, which is out now, gives you a full breakdown of all 68 teams, advanced stats, ATS trends, game grader projections. So hard copies available. You can get the PDF, pick6previews.com. And also, Pick 6 Plus is back for 2026, a weekly in-season stat package that refreshes all season long every Tuesday. Brett, by the way, Brett Ciancia will join the podcast next week. So we will dive in-depth with our good friend Brett Ciancia from Pick 6 Previews. But Get your copy now, picksixpreviews.com. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, the Bear, Chris Felica. We will dive into Notre Dame, Miami, and he's got five win totals that he likes. We will get those from him next right here on the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
And as promised, friend of VSiN, friend of mine, friend of yours, the Bear, Chris Felica, joins us. He has been removed. He has served his suspension that I imposed after all of his nonsense during the college football season, trying to get my Irish to miss the playoff.
No, that's not true.
And Go read the message boards, the Bear. Go read the message. They hate you. You're public enemy number one.
Well, that's good. And now if they want to read the message boards, that's fine. If they want to read my Twitter feed, which basically says what Notre Dame should be in, and the issue that Notre Dame has is with Alabama and Oklahoma. It should be it's not a Miami or Notre Dame. It's a Miami and Notre Dame, and it's a question of we've been there, done that. It's fine. My in-laws still love me in the Notre Dame family that I'm married into. I'm good there. But you wore your Notre Dame shirt. I saw it in pre-prod there, and we were warming up, and I decided to take out my my Miami hat.
No, it's. I think the people who know this is all tongue in cheek, because I thought Miami absolutely deserved to be over Notre Dame. I had a problem with the process. They should not have been eight spots back. Ridiculous.
Correct.
It was all timing and whatnot. And look, when you have less than 100 yards going into the fourth quarter of an SEC championship, I think you should be penalized. Maybe I'm crazy. I don't know. But we move on.
Maybe you look at how terrible they'd been over the last month of the year and stealing a couple of wins. I had no business winning, and Oklahoma was what a 7% post-game win expectancy against Alabama in that game, and the miracle win kind of against LSU as well. Yeah, we can go back and relive and rejudicate the 2025 season for sure. And,
yeah, our good friend John Murray over at the Westgate Superbook still upset that Notre Dame got left out, but I guess both of them should have been in. But we move on, and now we look ahead to 2026, where these two teams will play November 7th. And you know, Bear, I love picking your brain from a historical standpoint. And I forget who I asked about, you know, I actually asked Brad Powers about, you know, how anticipated this game could be if both are undefeated heading into this game, and they'll both be favored in every single game going into this one. Not to say they'll win them all. But you know, I think obviously you think back to 88 with Brent on the call, you know, the infamous game there, 93 game of the century, Notre Dame, Florida State, 05 Bush push. I mean, this has the makings with the, you know, last year's playoff situation with this renewed rivalry a little bit under the lights in South Bend. November 7th has the potential, Bear. I don't know if it will top the pregame push of Ole Miss hosting LSU week three, but I think it has the potential of being a top three or four game of the college football season this year.
Oh, clearly. Absolutely. Top three or four game of the year. You've got so many of those Oregon, obviously Ohio State,
Indiana, those
couple of Big Ten teams that play each other certainly have a potential to be great. But yeah, I think Miami, Notre Dame, just because of what you mentioned last year and the first game of the year, and it ultimately was the biggest game of the year last year in the eyes of the committee, and the tie and the unofficial tiebreak. But yeah, even if you, I'm trying to think, like living through 88 and 89 and then 90 with those three great games between Miami and Notre Dame, I don't know if it will reach that level of, I don't know, angst, acrimony, whatever, because you had Lou and you had Jimmy and then you had Dennis, obviously, for 90, but you had coaches in a period where you had two schools at the top of their games. And now, look, Mario tries to, I don't want to say distance himself from the history in the past. He fully embraces it, but he's all about moving forward. Mm-hmm. And you got Marcus Fornoda, who is like, you got two coaches who I don't think they really bring out like hate.
You don't think Marcus Freeman's going to go into the locker room, Bear, and say, "Leave Mario for me."
I don't think that's gonna happen. So
that would
I think
be a good battle royale, though. Marcus Freeman versus Mario Cristobal.
That would be. You see, I can't remember who it was. Someone did the if college football coaches had a steel cage match or a UFC fight, like who would it be? And I think at the time Coach O was still kind of feeling his oats. So I think Coach O was a lot of people's choices, but Mario would be a very, very good. And I don't think Marcus would take a backseat to anybody. But anyway, to get back to your question and initial comment in a roundabout type way, now that people are really bored of hearing me talk, it's going to be massively anticipated, and I think that the winner of this game is going to be the undefeated number one ranked team in the country going into the college football playoff, whether that's Miami who goes in there and wins, or whether it's Notre Dame getting revenge from everything that happened last year and going in. Like, and I think obviously, and probably in the case of Notre Dame, I do think if Notre Dame were to win that game and be undefeated number one, like I think they probably would be, it probably gives C.J. Carr the Heisman Trophy as well. Because I think there are more options on the Miami side, whether it could be Malachi Toney, whether it could be Mark Fletcher, whether it could be Mensa. But I think clearly if Notre Dame is 12-0, number one in the country, the quarterback of Notre Dame is going to win the Heisman Trophy. And I bet him back in January, as soon as they posted these odds, I got CJ plus 850 to win the Heisman. Mm-hmm. And now obviously he's 7-1. So I think that is the way I am looking at it. Both teams are going to be in the college football playoff regardless. That was another bet that I had made back around draft time, and we just ran through the numbers before. You can still get plus 108 on Notre Dame, Miami, and Oregon to make the college football playoff. You look at, like I said, Notre Dame's schedule. They've got the game at BYU, but they're better than BYU. Even though it was at BYU, you should win. The Miami game, obviously, you win that, you're in. Even if you lose it, you're in because you have that top 12 deal now. You look at Miami. Yes, they got a game at Clemson, which could be a little tricky, depending on if they rise up for one game, but Miami's better than Clemson. The rest of the schedule, very manageable. And Oregon, it appears like this is – we've heard it before with Oregon, kind of like this is the year. And mm-hmm. Every year, it seems like they lose that game where the black chips are on the table. Last year, getting embarrassed in the college football playoff. I know they were shorthanded and beat up in that game, but it appears that Oregon right now under Dan Lanning is set up as good as they have been in a number of years to make that national title run.
Well, let's stick with Miami because, historically, as you know, Bear, this has been a program that has lost games they shouldn't lose. And that can be said about a lot of teams. I mean, it could be said about Notre Dame, right? Northern Illinois, Stanford, when they were massive favorites, Marshall, all of those types of games. So Miami gets that monkey off their back, if you will, making the run that they did last year, proving a lot of people wrong. You look at the schedule, and as you alluded to, there's no SMU. There's no Louisville, the two teams that beat them a year ago. They do have that weird road trip to Clemson. Who knows what Clemson's going to be this mm-hmm. year? But you look at the schedule, obviously the Notre Dame game, they're an underdog. That's why their win total's 10.5 right now. But has Miami, famous last words, gotten over that we're going to lose a game we shouldn't lose type of mantra? Or is there a game that worries you as a Miami fan and a Miami alum in this schedule outside of Notre Dame?
There are two games that worry me and the legion of friends that I have in our rather large Miami football group chat. The first game is that Friday night game at Wake Forest mm-hmm. in September. That could be a tricky type game. Now, look, Miami is way better than Wake Forest, but we've seen Wake play some people, play up to the level of our competition many times. So that is a game. And then the other potential tricky spot would be the week prior going to South Bend at Chapel Hill against North Carolina. And again, who knows what UNC has on their roster this year? Who knows how improved they're going to be? But you got Bill Belichick and that staff in a big type game. Luckily, no one's won more big games, certainly at the NFL level, than Bill Belichick. So would it be surprised if they kind of draw something up and Miami's maybe caught a little bit looking ahead, potentially? So those would be the two games that I would worry about. Look, as we saw last year with SMU, the number of injuries that they had, the Louisville game where you had the number of turnovers that you had, anything can happen. It's college football. There are no certainties, but this on paper appears to be the best chance, the next best, current best chance that Miami has of running the table in the regular season if they can get past that game in South Bend.
Yeah, there's no other conference right now where there's an odds-on favorite outside of the ACC, which is Miami. And I think talent, you think about schedule, all of that makes a lot of sense why Miami is an odds-on favorite. So to circle back real quickly, Bear did play, and it's still playable. It's a little cheaper, but still plus money at FanDuel. Notre Dame, Miami, Oregon to make the playoff. You know, Bear, I've been consuming your content for a long time, back to the Bear and Stanford Steve days on the ESPN side, and now Bear Betts podcast. With the expanded playoff, have you felt like there are more opportunities to put together parlays like that to try to maneuver? Because Notre Dame is minus 800, minus 750 at different books, but you could pair them with some other teams like you did with Miami and Oregon, and you could end up with a plus money parlay here.
I think there is, and I think the same holds true on the no side. Like, if you look at some of these SEC teams that we all think potentially are going to be good, but some they're playing each other. They're going to lose. You could have a three-loss Texas, maybe not make the playoff, just like last year. You could have a three-loss Alabama, not make the playoff. You could have a three-loss LSU, not make the playoff. You could have a three-loss Ole Miss, not make the playoff. Like, there are and again, we're going down a road where people don't want to hear. Like, 9-3 in the SEC is what a lot of teams are going to wind up, and that's a good football team, a really good football team that would probably be 10-2 in the ACC or 10-11-1 in the Big 12. Like, that's where we are right now. But you could look at the no for a lot of these teams and kind of throw a nice no price in there as well to boost some parlays. But I do think, yeah, you look at now these 12, only 12 can make it. Mm-hmm. So there obviously are going to be some teams that feel deserving that are going to be on the outside looking in.
So, Bear, I actually posed this question on Twitter on Tuesday night when me and Humans were doing primetime, and there are 8 teams right now with plus odds to miss the playoff, and that would be Notre Dame, 5-1, Ohio State, plus 260, Indiana, plus 255, Oregon, plus 235, Miami, plus 190, Georgia, plus 184, and then Texas and Texas Tech are both plus 154. These are DraftKings odds. Any of those jump out to you as maybe worth a long look at possibly missing out on the playoff?
I would have to be Texas, and I know this is kind of what's... Yeah, that's what Sark has been harping on. You look at Texas's schedule. I mean, you have the Ohio State game at home, but you got to go to Tennessee. You've got the Oklahoma game, and we'll see if Oklahoma is better offensively than they were last year. And John Mateer obviously was not healthy when he played that game last year. You got Florida, who should be, you would think, improved with John Summerall coming in now. You got Ole Miss, though, that game is in Austin. At Missouri, who the hell knows, at LSU with Lane Kiffin, and at A&M. That is a really, really hard schedule. And like we were just talking about, you look at a plus price on the no for Texas to make the playoff. Like, that is something that I think could be very, very appealing for some people. Like, what could you possibly make a case for Texas Tech? Like they're going to win that league, right? I think that's the thing with Texas Tech. Like, even if you think maybe they slip up and they lose a game like they did last year at Arizona State, you look at their road schedule, at Oklahoma State, Baylor late in the year, Cincinnati's not going to be very good, Colorado's not going to be very good. Like, they're going to be in the Big 12 championship game, so I think they'll be in it.
Well, that's my case. And look, Bear, right now, I don't have a ton of futures. My only future right now outside of win totals is Texas Tech to win the Big 12. Look at the schedule. I mean, it's a joke. I mean, outside of the non-con, they don't play Utah. They don't play BYU. They don't play Kansas State. The next four best teams based off of the odds all go to Lubbock. And you know how crazy that environment is. And they're just more talented. Yeah, Brendan Sorsby's out there. I don't think they can win the national title with Will Hammond, but I think they can win the Big 12 without Will Hammond. So I do think if they're 11-1 and lose to BYU in the Big 12 championship, I think, yeah, they could miss it. But would you rather lock up your money now at plus 154 or take BYU on the money line in the Big 12 championship, right? You know,
So you talk about some other futures. When rumors of this Sorsby thing came out, and like before he was suspended, like I did grab Kansas State at 22-1 to win the league. As you look at their schedule,
I played 7.5 over on Kansas State schedule.
You get Houston at home. You get Oklahoma State at home. Iowa State's going to be down. Arizona State will probably. I mean, he's done a really good job recruiting and replacing people in the portal, but you lose a lot of guys. There's a lot of roster overturn there. Like, I am not necessarily like an Avery Johnson is this Heisman candidate type quarterback, but I figured it's an opportunity for them, like you said, with locking up money and playing certain sides of games. Like if you're holding a Kansas State ticket 22-1 and they're in the title game, you're in a really good position to be able to secure something.
Yeah, there's no doubt. All right, let's get to some win totals that you've placed. We'll start in the Big Ten. And right now I'll tell producer Wyatt to throw on the earmuffs because we're going to talk some Kyle Whittingham and Michigan here. Win total sitting at 8.5. They've got a massive game early on in the season against Oklahoma, where they are, I believe, a slight favorite at home. But you look at their schedule this year, Bear, and Kyle Whittingham comes in. You've got Iowa. You've got Penn State at home. You've got Indiana at home. You go to Rutgers, Oregon on the road, Ohio State, of course, to wrap up the regular season. 8.5 is pretty lofty. Now you got to pay some juice on the under, and it's moved a bit, but you like under 8.5 here for the Wolverines.
Yeah, I bet this back at minus 145. The last time I saw it, I was on minus 175. Is that right?
It's in that ballpark, yeah.
Yeah, I wonder if I know a lot of these sites will actually throw up some alts. Mm-hmm. Like you can maybe even play a little under 7.5 at some plus money. Like it's never a grace period type at Michigan. But I think after what their athletic department is going through right now and gone through, I think 7-5 is on the table. And I think obviously bringing in Kyle Whittingham is about as good of a hire as you could possibly have hoped for after what happened with Shromer. But you look at Michigan last year, and they faced four teams that finished the year ranked. They lost by 11, 18, 18, and 14. Like they were non-competitive in all four of those games. And I'm not sure the talent level is built up that much. I'm not sure if Bryce Underwood is the guy really to step in and run that offense. Maybe you get a quarterback controversy at some point during the year. So I see it. Look, they're not going to win at Oregon and they're not going to win at Ohio State. So okay. So then you got Indiana at home, Oklahoma, Iowa, Penn State. You got a trip to Minnesota as well. Like that, you got to basically lose one game amongst those five to beat me. I'm going under 8.5 every time, even at the jacked price that you have right now.
Yeah, it's minus 168 at FanDuel. I'll just say this to anyone coming out to Vegas to sign up for contests in the next month or so. Our friends at Stations Casino have minus 160 under 8.5 there. So always look around. You never know. We're always shopping for the best price that is out there for these season win totals.
Stations, a book that you get a lot of public, a lot of guys looking to bet favorites. So if you're looking to bet a dog type side or an under, that's the place to go.
That's where our buddy Chuck Esposito joins me every Saturday during the college football season, and I play a game of what side's the public on, and you get some overwhelming numbers on those popular favorites. There's no doubt. Stations
Chuck Esposito on the Tim Murray College Football broadcast, sponsored by Dog with Fleas.
I'll say this, Bear. When it's very rare, but when there is a popular dog at our friends at stations. I know it is the wrong side. I am like, whoa, that is the, that's usually when I text Bear and I'm like, exactly. Oh my God, are you seeing this? All right, let's stay in the state of Michigan. Let's go to Michigan State. I know there's a lot of excitement, gamblers. Hey, it's Pat's Cats, these feisty dogs, all of that. You know, you look inside the numbers, Bear, and you love to look inside the numbers. You removed that COVID season. Yep. Those last couple of seasons at Northwestern were bad, like really bad. And I know they had the Big Ten championship appearance in COVID. So their win total sitting at 4.5. I mean, is there talent there? They didn't go to the portal to get a new quarterback. Yeah. They have a non-conference game at Notre Dame, which is not going to be an enjoyable experience at night, by the way. So good luck. So 4.5, can Michigan State get to 5 wins this year?
I don't think so. When you alluded to the end of the run at Northwestern, you take out the COVID year and the other 3 years, 7-29, 3-24 in the Big Ten. Look, he got screwed at Northwestern the way everything went down. But I just, again, the COVID season wasn't real. I know it happened, but it didn't happen. They're gonna have to be, 4-3 after 7 games to have a chance. You mentioned the Notre Dame game. There's no Ohio State or Indiana, but you still got that. I can't see it. I think the concern, too, and you saw a little bit of it early on with Matt Rhule when he came back, how it's a different sport now from 2021, 2022, the last time we saw Pat Fitzgerald coaching. I think that was a reason why some of the bigger job openings that he was rumored to, they were a little concerned. Is he and the coaching staff that he's going to bring in, he wants to bring back a lot of the same guys. Like, is that going to play now in college football to 2026? Like, you're seeing schools with younger, forward-thinking boosters and all the things like that. It's a totally different world. And look, I like Pat. I like him a lot, and I hope he does succeed, but I don't think this is going to be a very successful season for him there.
You know, I was thumbing through our buddy Brett Ciancia's preview magazine, the Pick 6 Previews, which we always give a shout-out, did the read in the open there. And, you know, Florida State was a team that, I'll be honest, it wasn't early on my to-do list to look at their situation. And then you look at, all right, so they're going to start Ashton Daniels. Okay, this doesn't seem like a great starting point to go with that. Like last year, you could talk yourself into Castellanos, what he was able to do at Boston College. And obviously, boom, right out of the gates, they win as home dogs against Alabama, and then things fall apart. But you look at the schedule, and very rarely, Bear, do you say, ooh, they got a gauntlet in the ACC. But Florida State does. They don't play outside of Boston College, which they play on the road in November. They don't really play any of the bad teams. And throw in the fact that they have 2 non-conference games against Alabama on the road, their rival in Florida. They play based off of the odds, Bear. They play pretty much every good team in this conference. They play Miami on the road, Louisville on the road. Yep. They get SMU, which should be a good atmosphere, Labor Day Monday. Yep. They're short dog there. They got to get to 7 wins in under Mike Norvell with this schedule, where you're looking at an NC State team that I think could be pretty good this year. You play Pitt on the road on a Friday night. You know, Pitt, look, I take my shots at the Nard Dog a lot on this podcast, but a Friday night game in the cold in Pittsburgh doesn't seem like a recipe for success there. Yeah, you get a revenge game against Virginia, but I like Louisville this year. That's another Friday night game. Yep. So you're getting these like amped up atmospheres that you're going to play into. I haven't bet it yet, but I think you're going to convince me on under 6.5 here for Florida State.
You've just convinced yourself. You've talked about all the important deals here. The quarterback position is a major problem. Like Ashton Daniels is a guy who was in like a quarterback like carousel last year, and he was not very good. There really is nothing behind him of any great significance. They didn't win a road game last year, and you went through the road schedule. I don't think they're going to win a road game this year. And I think now with this week's news, if they were to lose it to SMU and Rhett goes there week one and wins, it is going to get ugly right out of the gate. And they're probably, they are in such dire financial shape in that athletic department right now, in the collective, really not non-factor. Like, is there a point now where, like, you just kind of stuck with Norvell for another year or so until that buyout gets even worse? Or now are we looking at Tom Herman maybe at some point being an interim head coach? But, I mean, you may be, like I said, the only chance they potentially have to win a road game, I think, is that game at BC, like you mentioned. But they could be 2-6 or 3-5 at that point.
Right.
And Mike Norvell might not even be there. So the quarterback situation is bad. Gus leaves abruptly. Herman's there now. A lot of the fan base is just kind of apathetic after what happened last year, and the fact that Norvell is still there. I do not think things are going to go well in Tallahassee, and that is not just me, the Miami alum, talking. It's interesting because a lot of the Miami alums, they want Florida State to show a little fight, show a little competitive, and it's kind of this like sick reverse psychology type deal where they want Mike Norvell and that staff to stay there because they feel very good about their position in the state, recruiting against and beating Florida State on a year end. They were petrified that Florida State was going to hire James Franklin. Petrified. And the fact that they didn't, and now James Franklin's at another ACC school in Blacksburg, that actually, that'll be an interesting thing, how James does at Virginia Tech in the coming years. Are they going to get back to the level that they did under Frank Beamer when they were so close to winning? Actually, I don't want to say playing for. They did play for a national championship in 1999, and hopefully he can get that ship righted again.
All right, two more win totals before I let you run here, Bear. Mm-hmm. Let's go to Arkansas. One of my biggest win total bets is UConn under, and we talked about it a couple months ago here on the pod, and it was Jason Candle. I'm like, you realize he did less with more at Toledo, and now he's going to a spot where you gotta pull the Jim Mora, right? Yep. So I say that to look at Ryan Silverfield. I'm like, Memphis is the best, at least the most lucrative AAC job, and he has never really got them to a level that I thought was good enough down there. Man, they were fine, but they never, in my opinion, got to that next level. And then Arkansas hires him. And now you look at a week two showdown. You got to go out to Salt Lake City. You got to take on Utah. They're already complaining about that. That's the after dark game. Then they play Georgia. Oh, by the way, if you want to look at a sandwich spot, how about you play at Utah, Georgia, and then before you go to Texas A&M, you got to play Tulsa at home. So
who is going to prove, by the way?
Yeah. So it's just like a weird, I mean, you look at this schedule at Texas, at Auburn, who I think will be feisty this year with Byron Brown. And you know, that was a program, in my opinion, that Alex Golish helped elevate at USF, at Vanderbilt. You don't have Mississippi State on this schedule. Win total at 4.5 for Woo Pig Suey, who, by the way, the greatest 2-10 team of all time, maybe, last year, Arkansas.
Yep. Five losses by 6 points or fewer. And you still got that 11-11 game SEC winning streak, headed into this year. Yeah, I can see a scenario where they do not win an SEC game as well. It looks like you've got the home game against Missouri, but I mean, Missouri is still better than them. South Carolina with the players coming back that maybe we didn't think were going to be coming back. South Carolina still is more talented than them. And look, Ryan Silverfield had Memphis kind of in a position early on last year where it looked like they were going to compete for the AAC title, and it looked like they were going to be in the mix for a college football playoff berth. And then the defense reared its ugly head at the end of the year. So it wasn't an overly popular hire to begin with. I think Arkansas is a hard job because you're in the SEC, but your base is still kind of like old Big 12 Southwest Conference type area, even though you've been in the league now for 30 some odd years. It's a hard job to really continue winning on. That's what makes a job that Houston Nutt did there really, really well, getting to the SEC title game there. But yeah, I am under 4.5 on Arkansas, and it would not surprise me if they went O-dash in the SEC this year.
Save the best for last. LSU, 8.5. There's so much intrigue about this team. Mm-hmm. College game day starts it off down there with Clemson going down to Death Valley week one. Not as sexy as we thought maybe this game would be. But, man, you got the lane train. You got the hype. You got all of this. 8.5, their win total, Bear, in year one of Lane Kiffin.
I have to go under just because you know that everyone is going to play the over. You know that under is going to be the contrarian sharp side. And this is, and we have been covering and watching this sport for a long time. We know this is going to go one of two ways. This is either going to go really well, or really bad year one. And I'm going to go with an 8-4 type ceiling. You got we talked about the Ole Miss game. They got the Clemson game week one at home, which will be wild. You go to Auburn, which will be better. You go to Tennessee, which will be another circus late in the year. You got Bama at home. You got Texas at home. You got Texas A&M at home. Like, those are three brutally hard home games. And I think everybody is excited to see what Lane can do there. And you bring in Levitt, and you bring in so many guys in the portal, Seton as well, the tackle. Like, you see the hope. You see the positives and the potential here. But making all this come together in year one, what the governor involved in now, and like it's just a weird situation that has the potential to snowball and go really, really poorly. So I think 8-4 is certainly a very likely outcome for LSU this year.
At Chris Felica is where you can find him on Twitter. The Bear Bets podcast, one of my favorites and go-tos during the season and the off-season. Episodes coming out now. And, of course, big noon kickoff when the fall rolls around. Bear, always appreciate it. And I'm glad the probation period is over for you to come back on the podcast.
I appreciate that as well. I felt like there really was some true hate there. And that was one-way traffic, because there's no hate coming from this end towards you. But, you know, I'm glad you finally you've gotten over your feelings.
Now, November 7th, baby.
I can't wait. Anyway, what's going to stink is that we're looking forward so much to November 7th. Like, we're going to be like wishing the season to go by just to get to that date. But yeah, it should be a lot of fun. Don't think we're going to get any Heisman Trophy shocks or national title type shocks this year, because it looks like those top seven teams or so are really, really close together. Any of those can win, and probably any of those quarterbacks will be the Heisman winner. But can't wait for the season to get here, and we'll talk regularly.
All right, there he is, Chris the Bear Felica.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Well, as mentioned in the open, I am very excited to welcome in our next guest. You know him from the all-knowing, hilarious Twitter feed at Old Takes Exposed. The new book is also hilarious. He sent me an advanced copy. I was thumbing through it and just laughing on my couch on Tuesday night. Freezing Cold Takes, College Football, an Incomplete History of the Game's Most Inaccurate Statements and Predictions. It is Fred Siegel who joins us right now. Fred, we love the Twitter feed. It's a badge of honor at times if you are retweeted by Old Takes Exposed. And sometimes you try to hide in the shadows. Sometimes you got to self-report, too. You know, you got to do that as well. But give us the premise and the backstory of why you wanted to put together this book, because it's not just tweets from the past 15 years. You go in depth. You're finding articles from the 70s, from the 80s. You're going back and watching games. What led to the idea to put this book together?
Well, I think it's a no-brainer. I've been doing the Cold Takes feed for about 10 years, and college football probably generates the most hot takes out of any sport. I mean, there's the most teams, there's the most passion, and there's the most anger. I mean, it just really, really has everybody caught up. The sport gets you caught up into a place where you're saying things you don't even know that you said 5 minutes before. It's just a great, great, great sport. And I thought I'd go back and look, not just in the past 10 years, but in the past 50 years, what kind of stuff was said about certain teams and certain great places, teams in history and certain great games in history and coaches and even stuff like, you know, reports about players, about certain coaches leaving and that were wrong, stuff like that.
I mean, once again, so there are 8 chapters in the book. Number 1, predictions before kickoff, plain and simple. Mm-hmm. Number 2, in-game commentary. Number 3, preseason predictions. Then in-season proclamations. And number 5 is just called back. And I want to start here because one of my favorite calls of all time that I use a lot. And once again, people know on the podcast, big Notre Dame guy. I remember watching Notre Dame, Texas in 2016, and Joe Tessitore goes, "Texas is back, folks." And I use that line all the time. And I don't know if that was the premise of your chapter back, but God, I love that call because Notre Dame sucked and Texas was not very good either. I think both teams missed out on a bowl in 2016.
I think they won 9 games combined.
Yeah.
It was that chapter is about declaring specific teams back. It's one of the big things in college football. It's a big thing in sports, but just college football in general. When a team that hasn't been playing well or historically hasn't been good in the past few years, but used to be really good, has one good game, everybody's looking to declare them back. And I use 2 teams. I really go in depth here. The ultimate back teams, the teams that were in the past, I'd say, well, Texas and Miami are the ultimate back teams. And my Texas for the past, I'd say, 30 years has been a very prominent team to be declared back. And then that back declaration turned out to be false. Miami in the past 20 years. Now this year they finally broke through in 2025. But for the previous 20 years, they were the back team, along with Texas. Everybody wanted to declare the U back, and it really has to do with the fact that these teams were so good for so long before that, that everybody wants them to be back, and they're looking for a time where they can say that they're back. And Texas. It happened, I say Texas, it happened a bunch of times in the 90s. And it happened, obviously, with Tessitore. It happened after Tessitore. And finally, with Sarkisian, I would say that they finally got back. I mean, they went to the national championship game and the semifinals. So they're back to where they want to be. But Texas and Miami were those teams. Miami, after they won the national championship in 2001 and had that great year in 2002, they were mediocre for 20 years. And anything good that happened, they would be declared back. I mean, there's specifically a time with Mark Richt in 2017 when they beat
the
Notre
turnover
Dame.
Chain.
Yeah, and they beat Notre Dame, and it was like the biggest back declaration probably in the history of college football. They killed Notre Dame. I don't even think Notre Dame got 10 points. And it was in Miami. Game day was there. They were undefeated. Miami, but they never really looked that good all year. And then they destroyed Notre Dame and that was it. Everyone declared them back, but they weren't back. They lost like 3 out of their next 4 games.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's so funny to just look back and you know, some of these games you go back and you think about, I was just scrolling through it. I'm like, oh, yeah. 1985, BYU plays at UTEP. It's really one of the bigger upsets ever. A 36-point underdog, but looking at the predictions, 56-7, 52-10, you got a columnist from the El Paso Times, quote, "For the timid souls, those weak of stomach or merely those who have passion for minor orange, one hope and one hope only seems to exist when the horde from the north that is the defending national champion invades the Sun Bowl. May they take prisoners." How do you, I mean, and there's, it's a gluttony and these are pre-prediction picks and this is your first chapter, but how did you go about finding these? And was there a favorite quote that you found from, you know, the pre-Twitter days, searching through old columns that were out there with predictions?
Well, not just old columns. You find clips. The pre-Twitter days, I mean, Well, first of all, that UTEP game, I don't think UTEP won a game all year after that. I mean, it was probably the biggest upset. I think it was our only win. And I mean, there's clips from College Game Day. You gotta watch a lot of College Game Day. Find them. After the College Game Day final, one of my favorite, the College Game Day final, where after Oklahoma beat Texas, it was probably like the fourth straight time Oklahoma beat Texas. It was 2004. And they looked horrible offensively, Texas. Just terrible. And after the game, I think it was Herb Street who suggested putting in Chance Mock at quarterback for Texas over Vince Young and moving Vince Young to wide receiver. And I think after that game, Texas won about 25 games in a row. And they won the national championship going into the next year. But that was a good one. I mean, most of the ones that I love the most are the ones I find before, obviously beforehand. Mike Bianchi from the Orlando Sentinel said, why is everyone so gung-ho on the Gators trying to sign Urban Meyer as the head coach? This was also in 2004 when you got a guy in Dan Hawkins at Boise State who wins with even a better offense, who wins more games. Remember Dan Hawkins? Don't play intramurals. Just play intramurals. The guy who went to Colorado.
Don't play intramurals, brother.
Yeah.
This is Division I football.
He was at Boise State at that time.
But yeah, it's, I mean, and some of these, you know, end up becoming, you know, we didn't know what the team was. You know, we just talked to Chris Felica about Pat Fitzgerald. He's at Michigan State. And when he was a player at Northwestern, no one had any idea what Northwestern was going to be in 1995. And I remember vividly, it was the first game that my sister got to attend as a student at Notre Dame as a freshman. They were 28-point favorites. They were, I think, maybe the favorite to win the national title, and they lose 17-15. And some of John P. Lopez of the Houston Chronicle, quote, "Little Debbie should have such an assortment of sweets."
Oh, yeah, with the schedule that Notre Dame had, he was kind of going off on their schedule, and they had to play Northwestern that year, and that was one of the teams he listed. But Lou Holtz was also supposed to get his 200th win that game, and it was supposed to be a given, and all the reporters were talking about how he was going to get what's it going to be like to win 200 games. After that game, of course, the media was like talking about how embarrassing it was for Notre Dame. And it really wasn't that embarrassing historically now, if you look on it, because Northwestern was the better team. By the end of the year, you could tell that Northwestern was a better team that day. And it was one of the most surprising upsets in Notre Dame history, but certainly not one of the most embarrassing.
No, yeah. I mean, as time wore on, I think the next week, we talk about letdown spots all the time. I think Northwestern lost to like Miami, Ohio, and then went on to win the Big Ten.
And they dropped it. They were up one maybe, and they had a safety in which the punter, they snapped it over the punter's head, or the punter dropped it, and they had to run and take the safety, and they lost that game. And then they won all the rest of their games, except for the Rose Bowl they lost.
So, Fred, when you think about putting this book together, so I stopped at chapter 5, which is called Back. You have a chapter on the Alabama dynasty, reactions upon hiring, mid-tenure observations. There's some good ones in there.
Oh, yeah.
Certainly Notre Dame-wise, Charlie Weiss. I mean, there were some hilarious ones. Future Heismans, preseason pronouncements, in-season remarks, reporting mishaps, trash talk, and definitive declarations. Of the 14 chapters, was there a one that brought a little bit more joy, or one that just made you laugh a little bit more as you unearthed some of just the outrageous things that were said in college football?
Yeah, well, I like the chapters on one of my favorites is doing the reporters. Before social media became big, there were some reports that about, you know, most specifically coaching hires that were completely inaccurate. And they didn't get as much play back then because there would be the report in newspaper and then it wouldn't happen and the cycle was much slower. But I remember there was Jimmy Johnson, in between the wait for the Fiesta Bowl in 1986, between it was the 1987 Fiesta Bowl, but the 1986 season. So this is December 1986, where Jimmy Johnson was coaching Miami. Miami was undefeated, about to play Penn State, and Bob Costas reported on NBC that he was going to be going to Texas. And this was like 2 weeks before the game. So, and it was completely wrong. And then Bob Costas said, well, I didn't say, it wasn't my report. It was someone else's who told me to say it. They reported, some guy for Fox reported that Marty Schottenheimer was going to go to North Carolina. And it was like completely off. And North Carolina got so mad. And another one reported that Steve Spurrier was off to Miami after his first year of, at South Carolina. And then there was, of course, Kirk Herbstreit, who said that Les Miles would take the Michigan job, which changed the course of college football. He said it on College Game Day, the day of the SEC championship game in 2007. And Les Miles went nuts, but he was probably going to take the Michigan job. But that sent everything out of whack. And then it ended up being Rich Rodriguez to Michigan. So it was, that changed a lot. That specific report, I think, changed a lot in college football. But I like the reports. That's probably my favorite one. Anything that hits before the internet, I liked finding. anything but before, I guess, social media. Maybe I would say before social media. But during the time of the internet, I loved.
Yeah, looking through some of these, I don't remember a lot of these. And, you know, certainly, I guess it could go hand in hand. The USC search and the aftermath of Pete Carroll. That's part of, I mean, the takes that were out there of Pete Carroll. You have the reporting of Dennis Erickson was apparently headed to USC in 2000. Yeah. So, I mean, that is one of the, you know, it's one thing to have an overreaction to an early start. This guy is going to be a home run hire, whatever. But the negativity that surrounded Pete Carroll going to USC and what would follow had to have made you laugh a bunch.
Well, yeah, because Pete Carroll, he fit the profile of a terrible hire.
Right.
And like five guys had turned down the job. Dennis Erickson turned down the job. Mike Bellotti turned down. Keep in mind, Dennis Erickson turned down the USC job to stay at Oregon State. Which is, I mean, but
think about those wonders right now. In 2026, Fred, the Oregon State head coach turned down USC.
Yeah, it would never happen now.
No.
And that just showed how really toxic USC was at the time. And Pete Carroll was mediocre at best in the NFL. I mean, his record probably just over 500. He had about five seasons as NFL coach, fired twice. So, and he didn't really have any experience as a college coach. So it really got, I mean, the fans also hated it. I have some good ones. Well, why not Sonny Lubick? And Dennis Franchione. One guy was really pushing Dennis Franchione to go instead of Carroll. So it was, the fan base hated it. Everybody hated it. And even after a few games, they were like 1-5, maybe his first year to start. And then he really picked it up. In 2002, they were really good. They won the Orange Bowl and Carson Palmer won the Heisman Trophy. And then it was smooth from there. But it didn't take long for Pete Carroll to make it big. But it was a very big surprise that he turned out to be good.
Heisman declarations are very funny. And I want to get into the Beano Cook, which I think is the prediction of all predictions. When anyone ever talks about a prediction blowing up in someone's face, Beano Cook predicting that Ron Paulus would win multiple Heisman trophies at Notre Dame. But going through it, I mean, it's a walk down memory lane. You know, Tate Forcier at Michigan. Mike Wickett, a morning show host in Milwaukee. I cannot believe how amazing Forcier is. He will win a Heisman before he leaves Ann Arbor. Garrett Gilbert at Texas. Taylor Martinez.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Remember Garrett Gilbert?
Yep.
in the national championship game, he had to play. Colt McCoy went down first drive after the 2010 national championship game. Colt McCoy went down first drive. And Garrett Gilbert came in. He was a true freshman. And he stunk in the first half. Then he was pretty good in the second half, but Texas still lost the game. And after, just because he was pretty good in the second half, it was like, he's going to win the Heisman in a couple of years, for sure. And he wasn't good at all. He turned out to be good. But Ron Pallas is the ultimate Heisman one. Beano Cook. But it's funny. Beano Cook said that Ron Pallas, the freshman from Notre Dame, was going to win two Heismans and Notre Dame was going to win three national championships. And that type of prediction wouldn't, I mean, that type of prediction would be commonplace now. No one would bat an eye. But back then, it was the biggest deal. And everybody thought this guy must be so great, this Ron Pallas. So when he was so great his first game for Notre Dame, everybody jumped on the bandwagon, like everybody jumped on it. Like it was, he was the greatest thing ever. And he turned out to have a pretty good career, but not great. He won no Heismans. And Beano Cook was, that was mentioned every single time Beano Cook made a prediction for the rest of his career.
I mean, it is funny, you know, once again, for those who know, yeah, Ron Pallas was pretty good. But he was playing in the day of Notre Dame at their peak, right? And the irony, Fred, is that I believe, if memory serves me correct, I believe he got hurt prior to the start of the 93 season.
Yeah.
And then Notre Dame goes and almost wins the national title. That is a sore subject for a lot of Notre Dame fans because they beat Florida State and then lost to Boston College. But he was supposed to be the starter that year.
Yeah.
He doesn't play. Kevin McDougal starts. So you had to delay the Ron Pallas multiple Heisman era. And yeah, he just could never live up to the expectations. And I remember, I can't remember if I was at the game, and maybe some old Notre Dame fans can remind me, but he broke his collarbone, I think, against Navy. I want to say in his senior year, and they actually cheered. It was not a good situation there.
Oh, yeah.
Because of the expectations that were put out there. And like you said, I mean, when someone like Beano Cook announces that a guy that weren't following recruiting rankings, wasn't Arch Manning, you know? It's this guy saying that, you know, a kid from Pennsylvania is going to win two Heisman trophies. Like, wow, this guy must be the greatest thing ever.
And he said it more than once. He said it during the game. He said it after the Florida State game, which was the big game in 93 that Notre Dame won against Florida State. Beano said that. And then at the beginning of the 1994 season, he said it again. And then Musburger said it during the Palace's first game. He said, maybe three Heismans. So it was,
I need to ask Brent about that. That is,
he said it, and then during a game, he relayed the story. During a game later in the year, he said that he was in Champaign, Illinois, covering a Penn State game, and someone called him up in the middle of the night. They found his hotel room and go, "How many Heismans do you think he's going to win now?"
So before we wrap up, just the Twitter age, you know, I'm curious your selection process. I know you have stated, and I wholeheartedly agree, no more politics. Politics are out. So you're just focused solely on sports. But there are people, let's be honest, nowadays, they kind of want that badge of honor. They want it. They want to put out the hot take. So for you, Fred, do you have to sift through it a little bit? What is the recipe to selecting what gets retweeted on a Saturday night following predictions?
Well, it's kind of a balancing act. I do not like the people who make a prediction just to make the prediction and get everyone mad and get engagement. That's what I'm trying to weed out. I don't bat 1,000 at all. But there's certain accounts you know that they're going to. There's certain fan accounts that are going to make a bold prediction about their team, about any possible game they play, or any player playing in any game that even has any relation to their team. So those guys I don't want to use either, because it's not really, if it's not a genuine prediction, I want it to be somewhat genuine, at least. The person actually believed this. Now, maybe they may be a little hyperbolic or trying to be a little provocative, but they have to believe in it. It's much harder now. It's got, or each year it gets harder and harder to figure out, because that right now, that's really the currency, is being provocative.
You know, I'm curious, Fred, you know, we're a gambling podcast, and me and my co-host during the season, we love to pick underdogs. So sometimes those blow up in our face, you know, and we were talking about a couple of predictions. I had one back in 22 or 21. I liked Maryland to win on a Friday night. They lost like 51 to 10, you know. So from an old takes exposed, how does gambling fit in? Because, you know, we are trying to, you know, find the underdogs, or, you know, how does gambling now fit into your landscape of finding predictions that need to be outed?
I don't really like using gambling per se, because first of all, you'll take a gambling someone who's announcing their picks. And maybe they'll announce it on a video or something, and someone will just clip out that specific pick. But maybe you went 4-1 and right. lost that one game. The problem with gambling is gambling's on the aggregate. So gambling is in as a whole. That's how you decide how you did, because you know you're going to lose games. So say you pick 10 games, you make 15 bets and you win 12 of them, you're probably going to make a lot of money. So you can't really blast you for the three you lost. Now, if a gambling person says, guarantee, lock of the week, no matter what, pick this game, then I'll use that for sure. Because if you're talking about a lock, or someone questions the line, I can't believe that this team is favored by this many points and that team wins by 1,000 or something. that type of stuff. But if it's just a pick in a collection of picks, then I don't use it usually, because you're taking out the losses, but not really seeing how they did in the aggregate. Now, if someone picked a bunch of picks and got all five wrong, oh, that's complete fodder for the feed.
Oh, God.
If you go 0 for 5 or something, you get 5 of your best picks and you list them on the thing and all 5 of them are wrong, that is an automatic post.
Well, I will make sure, hopefully, never to be 0 for 5 and let you know. But this book is, if you're a college football junkie, which you're not listening to this podcast if you're not, I know it's not all gambling related, but man, it just makes you laugh, and it kind of gets the brain going again. I'm like, oh yeah, Ron Zook at Illinois. Remember those days? And just different types of things. I guess final word from you before we get into where people can get the book and when it's coming out. Was there a particular avenue you liked going down more? Per se, in this book, that you found the takes were just ever flowing? Was there a particular topic, coach, game? Was there any one game that really, or topic that stood out to you, that just the takes were endless?
Okay, well, there's two I could tell you. One was national championship game in 2014 when Auburn was up 21-3 against Florida State, and they end up losing that game. And the thing about it was just as much Auburn went being up, but it was more about like this conference supremacy thing. So it was like the SEC is so good, they're going to be, because FSU went undefeated and they didn't play anybody that year. And the SEC, they couldn't handle the SEC. It was more about that than anything else. And there was just an overload of takes during that. And then there was also when Chip Kelly was hired at UCLA. Oh my God, I've never seen anything like it. It was automatic slam dunk. I think nobody thought that was a bad hire. Everybody thought it was the biggest home run.
I was guilty of it.
I just think it was just assumed that he was great in the Pac-10 before, and now he's coming back and he's going to be great again. And I guess his offense wasn't as... everybody was doing it by then. So, and he just I guess he is recruiting. He didn't care to recruit anymore. No one took that into consideration. But those two, I'd say right off the top of my head, were. And maybe also before, when Alabama played, it's another conference supremacy one. When Alabama was lined up against Ohio State in the 2014 playoff.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody was just like, Urban Meyer's going to get his ass kicked. And even during the game, I think Alabama went up 21-6 in that game. And then in the second half, Ohio State just absolutely clobbered them. But that game, too. And that was any of the games where there's something going on in the middle of the game, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's impressive, too. You go back, you watch these games, you hear the clips. I am laughing, though, at the Chip Kelly hire. I was guilty of it. Yeah, I thought it would be a no-doubter. Apparently, we need to tell people in the media to get rid of home run hire, because that apparently was their go-to. Barrett Salehi, home run hire. Grand slam, Bruce Feldman. Grand slam, Clay Travis. Home run, Bill Bender. Home run, Yogi Ross.
Tim Brando's the king home run hire guy. I mean, he'll defend every hire, and he's not afraid to defend a suspect hire either.
Troy Aikman, former UCLA quarterback. I would argue it might be the greatest hire in UCLA history. I don't know if he's just talking about football, because I can think of a basketball coach that was a pretty big hire once upon a time at UCLA.
Speaking of that, when Charlie Weiss, after 2005 season, or maybe after the 2005 season, 2006 season, somebody said, you know, he could end up being the best coach since Frank Leahy at Notre Dame. And Leahy was before Ara Parseghian and Lou Holtz.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah, Charlie Weiss had some good ones.
Oh, yeah. No, I was living in it. I was a freshman at college, Fred. I was living the life. I went to the Bush game. I was on cloud nine. It was there were T-shirts I swear to God, there was a T-shirt that said new Pope, new coach, new era. And then there was a picture on the back. It said same old Jesus. Just, oh man, the level of excitement on that campus that fall was pretty high with Charlie Weiss, and we know that all happened. Fred, where can people get the book? When can we get the book? It is if you are, like I said, college football fan, it's a perfect summertime read. Just sit there and laugh your butt off at the great takes that are out there on these games.
Well, the book comes out on August 18th, but it's available for pre-order now anywhere. Amazon, Barnes & Noble, any of the places you get your books, it should be up there. Certainly up there on Amazon. So pre-ordering would be great. I think any college football fan, like you said, part of the goal of the book was not just showing the cold takes, but just bring back that nostalgia, like the history. Oh, yeah, that happened. And some a little color behind it. And so there's some long stories, there's some big ones, but I think any college football fan, especially college football fans who go back, especially as long as you, would love it. Just love hearing about it. And even newer college football fans who weren't really following in the 90s would love to see some of these stories, stuff that happened in the 90s, because that was my favorite era of college football.
Fred, great stuff. The Twitter feed, as you all know, Old Takes Exposed. And the book, once again, is Freezing Cold Takes, College Football, An Incomplete History of the Game's Most Inaccurate Statements and Predictions. Fred, congrats on the book. Appreciate the laughter that I enjoyed last night. I will be reading it again tonight and laughing more at the other things to unearth. Appreciate it. And best of luck with the book.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
There he is. That's going to do it for our podcast. Just a reminder, please rate, review, and subscribe. This is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.